that, I'd like to introduce you again to applying the principles to social media, and our first speaker tonight is going to be Frank D.
I'm an addict. My name is Frank. Hey, family. Applying principles. What is it? Applying principles to social media. And when Amy told me the title of this workshop, I said, I don't know a damn thing about applying no principles to social media. And you know what, Amy? You're the only one to could have gotten me down here on Saturday. It took me an hour to go 5 miles to the Bay Bridge, and so probably Wayne probably pushed you to do this. But so, and then she said, "Well, Frank, you know, something changed, and if you want to change the topic, you know, you can." And I was like, "Man, I done prayed about this topic, I done meditated, I done read the pamphlet, Guiding Principles and Social Media. I'm sharing on this topic, so I'm going to try to do the best that I can talking about." Principles and social media. So I came into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. My clean date is October the 3rd, 1982. So we didn't have a big issue with social media when I came into the fellowship. I think back then I might have had a pager, and it was probably the worst thing I could have ever had because we didn't have cell phones then. And my wife would page me every 5 fucking minutes. And so I had to stop and find a phone in a phone booth, because they used to have phone booths back then. And I would call and say, "What's the matter? What's going on?" She said, "Oh, I just want to know what you wanted for dinner." I was like, "Fuck me." So, you know, needless to say, we didn't have a big social media problem then. But, you know, when I first came into fellowship, we did do spot radio announcements, letting people know that Narcotics Anonymous existed. And so, you know, people would always say, "Well, aren't we breaking the spiritual principle of anonymity, letting people know that, you know, about Narcotics Anonymous?" I said, "No, you know, the tradition, I mean, talks about personal anonymity is what we talk about. We want people to know that Narcotics Anonymous exists, because when I came around, when I went into treatment, I didn't know anything about Narcotics Anonymous, and I thank God for H&I that came to that treatment facility and brought meetings in that helped me learn about Narcotics Anonymous, you know. So yeah, you know, no, we're not breaking traditions. You know, we put up billboards letting people know that there was a helpline that they could call, you know, and people would get up in arms, or they put up a billboard, they putting signs on buses, they doing radio announcements, you know. But it was all a part of that process of learning. What we do in Narcotics Anonymous, you know, to help people know that this life-saving program is available to everyone. And the way we do it, you know, because, you know, we have to be real careful about how we present ourselves, and that's what brings us to the social media thing, man. I believe, what was it before Facebook? It was some other social media before. MySpace, you know. And then we started getting into that kind of stuff and posting things on social media. And me personally, now I'll go on social media and somebody saying I'm celebrating such and such, I might say congratulations, I might do a like or something like that. But personally, I don't put myself out like that as far as being in recovery. I do it for a couple of reasons, you know. The main reason is because of the spiritual principle of anonymity. You know, and it's hard to be famous in an anonymous program. So, you know, I don't do it for that reason. And the other reason is it's because of the job that I do, my work with the state of Maryland. Now, you know, there are people in my agency that know I'm in recovery, but I don't put it out there like that. You know, if I want people to know that personally, I'll share that with them. You know, and then I don't tag people on social media. I don't do that. You know, if somebody says I don't want this posted, well, I don't take pictures and put on people anyhow, you know. And it's okay if people do it. They'll ask me if it's okay. I'll tell them it's okay. But for the most part, I don't like to do it, you know. But respecting, and see, the other piece of that is that when I put myself out there like that and talk about Narcotics Anonymous, then it might look like that I'm trying to represent Narcotics Anonymous, or things that I can do or things that I do could reflect on Narcotics Anonymous. So, you know, that's why I have to be real careful of what I present and how I present, because it's always being mindful of the fact that there's a potential newcomer, somebody that might come into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous that may be watching me. You know, and when we talk about in our traditions, when we talk about in our literature that we work by attraction and not promotion, you know, we want to attract people to this program by the way we're living today. I remember when I first came to Narcotics Anonymous and I started going to meetings, I was sitting in the rooms and I'd be thinking, man, these people are full of shit. You know, how the hell do you stop using drugs? But the attraction for me was, what they were sharing let me know that they knew what they were talking about. You couldn't make up this nightmare. These people were talking about how it was, how it is today, their experience, dreams, and hopes. And what they were sharing connected me with what they were doing, but it was something different about them. And the attraction for me was, the difference was, these people were laughing, they were seeming to like they were having fun, they were doing things in their life, you know, and this, man, I never did anything outside of, you know, I pretended to live, I pretended to have a life, you know, I pretended to be an adult, you know, I had a family, I pretended to be a husband and a father, but the reality was, I wasn't any of those things. And when I started seeing you guys in these rooms demonstrating that, man, that was an attraction for me. So that's the kind of image that I want to portray of Narcotics Anonymous, that this is a life-changing program, that this program can help people to recover and to live one day at a time. That's what I want people to see. You know, so if we had spokespeople or people that represented Narcotics Anonymous, I remember one time something happened and this guy was on the news, or he was doing something, I can't quite remember. And the next day on the news, they was arresting this guy. You know, and that was maybe the only image that somebody had of Narcotics Anonymous, because this person was on the media talking about NA, and then the next thing you know, he was being arrested. And so that, you know, is the things that I feel like we have to be real careful of. And then Zoom came along, COVID hit, you know, and I thank God for the Zoom platform that the Narcotics Anonymous meetings are on, and that presents a whole nother different challenge, because you can be sitting on Zoom, somebody could take a picture of the Zoom room, you know, and have your picture, and you never know it because they're off camera, you know. And so, you know, people can choose, because if I choose to break my anonymity, that's my business. You don't have the right to do that, and I don't have the right to do that to you. You know, so we have the choice of going off camera. I choose to be on camera, because that's how I connect with you folks in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, seeing, interacting. I'm glad now that we're starting to get back to in-house meetings, but I believe that the brick and mortar and the hybrid meetings are going to still continue to exist, because we found out that it serves a purpose. Now, one of the things I've been experienced or exposed to lately is, and I work for the Free State Regional Service Center of Narcotics Anonymous, so I get a lot of stuff. People call me to ask me questions. I don't have all the answers. I don't, you know, they think I do, but, you know, I don't, you know. And so what I have been hearing lately was there's been some conflict in these home groups, you know. So with Zoom, somebody has to hold or host the meeting. I mean, it's just the way it is. And the group has to choose somebody to do that. And I suggest that the group gives serious consideration to who they ask to do that, because they've gotten into some personality conflicts in these groups, and they got back and forth and egos and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And the person that hosts the Zoom got pissed off and cut the Zoom off, and the group couldn't meet, you know. And so that really, you know, affects when you go to log into your home group and the home group's not there. And then the group had to regroup, and somebody else had to take it on and had to do that, you know. So it's a whole lot of things with this whole new social media thing and the principles that we say we practice in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. And one of the people happened to be a guy sponsor. And I just laid his butt out. I said, you know, I don't care what your personal feelings was, you don't shut the group down. You know, if anything, you turn that over to somebody else and allow them to do it. If you feel like, you know, we had a conversation about it, we talked about it, and you know, and he really hasn't been coming to meetings lately, you know, so, but I still reach out, I still talk to him, I still try to help guide him, because, you know, the primary purpose of any NA meeting or group is to, you know, provide meetings that's conducive to recovery. And that's always the ear and the eye that we need to have, that I have for our NA meetings, is to have meetings that are conducive to recovery. So a newcomer just coming into the door, or new that's coming into the rooms, they can have an atmosphere where they can recover. You know, because I know, man, it was important for me, you know, because I couldn't sit still when I came in the rooms. You know, I came in here, I detoxed off of methadone in the room of Narcotics Anonymous, and I couldn't sit still for 5 hot minutes, for more than an hour. So I was grateful for the fact that the meetings would start on time, the meetings would end on time. You know, I got involved early on in public relations, you know, it was public information then. You know, we used to go to the schools and talk to the children, you know, and we would tell the kids, you know, you may not have a problem with drugs, you know, but you might know somebody that do. And we're, you know, this is a place that you can let them know that they can come and get help. Or you may find out later on in your life that you have a problem and you know that this program exists that can help you. You know, went into the jails, man. I remember going out to Brockbridge, scared as hell to go into those jails, but carrying the message, you know. And I thank God for my predecessors because they showed me how to carry that message. They showed me how to conduct myself. They showed me how important it was for people to see us as recovering people, you know, human beings, but not practicing addicts, you know. So I learned that, you know, and I got involved early on. It was very important, you know. Back then, man, you got involved in service whether you wanted to or not. You know, we didn't have a H&I subcommittee when I came in. Each home group took a turn going into the prison or going into the hospital. It was this home group's month to go in, and we went in. Then the next month, another home group went in, and that's how we carried the message until we started forming our committees and subcommittees to carry our message of recovery. Man, this is a life-saving message, you know, and this whole journey has been an awesome experience for me. And I couldn't see this coming, you know. If you tried to tell me some of the things that would happen in my process, I wouldn't have believed it, you know. But I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, man. And so, you know, these rooms are important to me, and I hold Narcotics Anonymous close and dear to my heart, you know. I pray that, you know, we continue to stay strong as a fellowship. I guess, you know, and this is a God-given program. And one of the things that I've learned since I've been here, that as long as God is in this, it's going to continue. You know, I have my little self-centered concerns and my little self-centered fears. And one of my fears is that I don't see a whole lot of new people coming into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. Most of the meetings I go into, it look like geriatric conventions. People like myself, we're getting older. You know, I came here at the age of 30 years old. I'm 69 years old now, you know. And I don't want to see Narcotics Anonymous fade out, you know. And I always, oftentimes I say, if you're here on medication-assisted treatment, welcome, you know. But the field I work in and the things that I see, and I see how they're pushing medication-assisted treatment, you know, and how they're treating Narcotics Anonymous now, and how, you know, we used to be the bomb, you know, because they would tell their clients to attend 3 meetings a week and this, that, and another, you know. And now it's like, oh, don't go to them rooms. They don't accept you. They don't believe, you know, that you're clean and all of this kind of stuff. And that's what they're telling people, you know. And so I think we have to become creative in the message that we're putting out there, that, you know, you are welcome here, and keep coming until you can come back clean. You know, we want to expose you to this freedom of the spirit. You know, yeah, you might be on medication-assisted treatment, but how much freedom do you really experience being there? Because I know I can speak from experience. You know, after being on methadone for 10 years and I'm getting off of methadone, man, it was like, my God, man, it was like a whole new world that I was exposed to. You know, when I got clean and I felt my life coming back and my spirit waking up and my nerves starting to wake up. And, you know, I just wanted to experience life. I remember the first thing I wanted was to go buy a stereo system and listen to some good music. And, you know, and that's how my recovery took off. So we have a responsibility for the new members, you know, how we present ourselves. And we have to honor that tradition of anonymity, man, because it's so important that we respect each other's anonymity. We might not think anything of it, posting pictures, you know, and doing this and doing that, you know, but we never know how it might affect someone. We never know how someone's employment could be affected by that. I know jobs that will look at your Facebook page. They'll look at your Facebook page just to see what you're posting. I know just recently a friend of mine told me he had hired someone, and a couple weeks later, man, they let her go because they looked at the girl's Facebook page and they didn't like what they saw, you know. So when you think about tagging people or putting people out there, just think, is this something that could help the individual, harm the individual? Did you get their permission to do that? And then the other thing that the pamphlet talks about is checking your privacy settings on your social media. What do you have your settings on? You know, can everybody see what you post? Only a select group of people? You know, are you posting to a group of people? So there's a lot of things to consider when we talk about social media. It's a lot of things that we need to think about, man, because every action we have could have an adverse reaction for somebody, and it could affect their recovery. Because, you know, for somebody to be exposed against their wishes could be very devastating for that individual, you know. And I don't want to be responsible, well, I can't make anybody use, or I can't cause somebody to relapse, but I don't want to be the reason that somebody uses for something like that to happen to them. How much time do I have, Paula? 14 more minutes. You think I can talk for 14 more minutes? You know, but, you know, and I just, when I think about my own recovery process, when I think about, you know, coming in here and working the steps and, you know, I know for the first, I had to be crazy as shit for the first 10 or 15 years of my recovery, you know, and just starting to grow up and starting to learn to live and enjoy life, man. This experience, you know, and I hold this whole thing near and dear to my heart, and I do have concerns about how our behavior can affect other people, you know, how it could affect Narcotics Anonymous as a whole, that we do things. So yeah, social media guiding principles, you know, keeping that up front. And there's so many different aspects to that. You know, when we go into facilities, when we present this message, if we go out and have a picnic, if we do whatever we do, we're always presenting an image of Narcotics Anonymous, you know, because the first thing people want to say is those addicts. You know, they always want to, we've already been stigmatized. We've already had a bad picture painted about us. All people got to do is hear the term addicts and they become negative about us. They get turned off about us, you know, and we're not those people. Yeah, I mean, I'll be an addict for the rest of my life, but the reality is I know that I'm not a practicing addict. I know today I'm a recovering addict, and I know what recovery means for me. It's about practice and principles. It's about honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness, doing that to my best of my ability. And do I do it perfect all the time? No. You know, and working at the service center, man, you know, it's like I'm exposed to so many different things and so many different people and, you know, all of these different situations that we encounter on a daily basis. And I thank God, man, that, you know, through this COVID, that our regional service center has been able to stand and to still be there to, you know, to do what we do, man. That's a blessing because, you know, when the meeting shut down, we took a big hit, you know. We have a newsletter that the Free State region had the longest, it wasn't the oldest newsletter, but it was the longest continuous running newsletter in Narcotics Anonymous, and we're not printing that newsletter right now. We haven't printed a schedule since January of 2020, you know, and people stop into the service center and say, can I get a schedule? And I got to say, I don't have a schedule to give you, you know, but I try to point them to the website, social media, You know, I try to say, go on there. You know, they have a more up-to-date listing, you know, because you don't always, I don't always hear when another meeting just opened up and they're in-house and they're, you know, because people want to go to in-house meetings, you know. Be honest with you, today is the first time I've gone to a in-house meeting since COVID started, and I loved it. The guy that did the workshop that I went to, man, the guy, Chris, he just... You know, he did an awesome meeting, you know, and I just felt right back at home. I felt so right back at home, you know, and it was so easy for me to get comfortable sitting at home watching or attending meetings on the Zoom platform. It's like, oh, well, I'm not really ready to go back to meetings. But you know what? The reality is, it's happening. We got to gear up for it. We got to get back to what we do. We got to be there for the newcomer. We got to be able to sign those court slips, you know. And that's another thing. That's another thing that we offer newcomers, you know, that or people that has court slips or whatever you want to call them, you know. And people say, well, isn't that breaking traditions? You know, we're not doing it for the courts. We're not doing it for the parole and probation people. We're doing it as a service for the person that's bringing that slip to the meeting. That's why we sign slips, to help that person. We're not doing it for the courts. We could care less about them. You know, so that's a whole nother social media thing that we do to help people, you know. And how we do that, you know, is very important. So, yeah, you know, I got real comfortable sitting there, clicking on my computer, scrolling through, looking at all the people, you know, on the meeting, and really not hearing the message some of the times, you know what I'm saying? But I, you know, just coming back, man. So our home group, Recovery at the Center, we're getting ready to open back up, you know. We're going to do hybrid, and we're going to do, you know, some people in-house and start getting it back together, you know. And we had, prior to COVID, man, we had recovery houses coming there and people showing up, you know, and it was just a place to gather, you know, and get a message of recovery. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it, you know. I'm looking forward to it. I got my vaccination. Hopefully, you know, that'll give me some protection against this virus, because I'm in that age group where, you know, I could be high risk. And you never know, man, but thank God that we're turning the corner. I don't think we're quite there yet, you know. I don't think we've gotten there yet, but I think we're on our way, you know. And we need to be available for people, man. And we need fresh blood coming into the rooms. We need younger people, man, that's enthusiastic about carrying this message and hearing this message, you know. We got to do what we can do, man, to help get those people here, because I work for the state of Maryland, and what I see them doing is they pumping all the money into medication-assisted treatment. That's where all the money's going, and that's where they're pushing people. And I'm just, my heart breaks, because there are going to be a lot of people that will not have an opportunity to experience this life free of mind-altering, mood-changing chemicals, and to be able to have that spiritual awakening. That freedom of the spirit, man, oh my God. You know, I just remember how it was when I came from under them drugs, man. And for the first time in my life, I just want other people to be able to experience that. I think I'm out of time, Chris. I think it's your turn, man. Thanks for letting me share. I keep coming back.
What a... That was eye-opening. I definitely got something out of Frank's share. And I do believe someone named Chuck is our next speaker. Everyone, welcome, Chuck.
They're recording. Come on.
Woo! Yeah, man.
Did you say tell us or show us?
He said show.
Hi, my name is Chuck. Gee, I'm an addict. I'm from Southern California. So if I have a funny accent, just remember, it ain't me that has the accent. It's you. Okay? I want to thank you, Frank. I mean, we talked a little bit earlier, and you gave me the pamphlet. We have a pamphlet about this, right? Because when they asked me, they said, well, which one do you want to share about? I thought when they were talking about, you know, social media, I thought they were talking about porn. No? That's not what social media is? I was thinking to myself, why would they have porn in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, right? That doesn't make sense. In 1981, I lived in Oxnard, California. I'd been clean for a few years. I had a baby. I was working for the phone company, a big, you know, regulated utility. And a local paper, this is back in the days where they had local newspapers. And the local newspaper, I remember, was the Oxnard Press Courier. They called me and they said, hey, we hear you go to these Narcotics Anonymous meetings. There was one meeting in Oxnard. One meeting in the whole geographic area. Said, we hear you go to these meetings of Narcotics Anonymous. We want to do an article about it. And I said, okay, cool. Fine. So I said, and they said, can you come out to our offices tomorrow or the next? And I said, yeah. And then I turned around, I called the office, I called the World Service office, and my friend Danette answered, somebody I knew. And I said, hey, I'm going to go they want to do an article. I said, yeah, well, you got used to traditions, you know, read this before any of our literature. You know, we just had the white book. Do the traditions, and then, you know, just, you know, keep your integrity. So I remember this very clearly. I went and we were having a conversation back and forth, and then it was a woman reporter, and the third question she asked me was, who is the president of Narcotics Anonymous? And I said, I am. And I said, well, no, I'm not. And then I tried to explain, you know, that I tried to explain, organizational structures usually have a hierarchy, and there's enough, and we're flat, right? We're literally flat. I didn't even try to get to we're an upside down pyramid. I didn't even try to get to that. Okay, so then on and on, you know, we're anonymous. You can't have my last name, can't use that. On and on and on. Then she said, okay, we're done. I just want to get a few photographs of you. And I said, no, you can't take a photograph of me, because you can't take my picture, give my name, talk about me being, you can take a picture of the back of my head. She didn't understand this. This was in 1981. Okay, so fast forward to today. Everybody knows about the 12-step programs. I mean, there's dozens of 12-step programs, but still on the other side of the equation, on the news side of the business, they don't know about the traditions. It's not up to them to take care of it, is it? They don't care. They're off to get a story. That's what they're going to do. So it's up to me as the member, right, to take responsibility for the traditions. And that's always a difficult thing, right? I really love the way that you shared and used the word mindfulness, because that's really what this is all boils down about. Let me just ask you real quickly, all right? How many people in the room have a Facebook page? Okay. How many in the room have an Instagram? Okay. Twitter. Twitch. Ah, I gotcha. TikTok. Okay, all of these vehicles are media that gets connected via what? Your phone. Your phone is what connects you to this. You literally, this device you have in your hand literally can connect you to anybody in the world. So as a Narcotics Anonymous member, when we're putting stuff out there, because we do, how many people in the room tonight know people who everything that the person does is on their Facebook page? Right? I mean, there are people who literally, you know, you can look at them in the morning, you can find out that the dog was going to get groomed, and then at lunchtime you can find out that the dog got a shitty haircut, you know, and then at night you can find out that the husband and the wife got in a fight over the dog's haircut, right? That happens, right? And that happens with NA members. It literally does, right? Here's what I want to share with you. You can believe it or not. Once you put a piece of information from your phone out there, it's there forever. And anybody can get to it. It's there forever. It literally is. If you don't know that, you don't understand anything about databases and how people are making money off of the information. The whole mechanism is set up so they can target market me down to, what did you do today, Chuck? What do you think fucking Facebook does with that information that I got in a fight over my dog's haircut? Isn't it funny that 2 days later I get a little flash from Betsy's Poodles, right? Right? The mobile poodle delivery? Well, how do they know that? Because they're reading my stuff, right? They're reading my stuff. They literally know what I'm doing. And I'm freely giving it to them. I don't care what security protocols you put into place. If I'm in your group and you send me a picture and it's on my phone, guess what? It can go anywhere in the world. Because what can any phone do? Even a dumb smartphone, what can it do? Swipe it and take a screenshot. So if there's a picture of Frank and Frank doesn't want to be in a meeting and he told his best friend, hey, don't tag me, but I see Frank, who don't know Frank, I can go, wham, I got a picture of Frank and I can post it out on, hey, isn't Chuck G great? And this is my friend Frank, we just went to a meeting and he shared something very spiritual and I want to be like him when I grow up, right? That shit can happen right now. So what's important for us as members to think through? Because I'm the other side, right? I'm a technology guy. I've been in technology my whole life. I've been a third generation phone company. I've been in technology. The technology you guys are going to use tomorrow, I used it 3 years ago. Okay, that's kind of my model. That's how I make a living. So I'm savvy with technology. I've been on these video platforms. I've been selling them for 15 years. It's new to a lot of people. So there are certain things that happen, right? If you have that skill and you have that education process, what happens? Well, last March, what did I do? I was part of a meeting facility. NA really doesn't have clubhouses, but I was at part of a meeting facility that had 30 NA meetings a week in it, right? And guess what happened last March? It shut down. What did I do the next day? I put together a meeting platform, right? And I communicated to everybody, and I said, here's a platform where we can meet virtually over the internet with computers. And by the way, I will hold a class next on Tuesday on how we should behave and what we should do and things to be careful of and things that we should and shouldn't do, right? And how this new technology is going to affect us. Oh, by the way, you should be dressed, right? You put your clothes on when you put your camera on, right? Don't eat in front of the camera. All those just basic stuff, right? And we did that from the get-go, right? And then NA as a